It's the 6th of February, the day after the State of the Union address. And joining us this morning from Sonoma State University, political professor Dr. Dave McEwen. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
By and large, America loved the State of the Union address. Did you?
Well, I mean, this speech really explains kind of the bipolarity of President Trump. You have a speech that's about uniting the country that starts out at least with the notion of getting things done together, and then quickly diverts into a speech about 2020 reelection themes. If you look very closely at immigration, if you look very closely at even things like infrastructure, in which there is agreement, it's unclear how the president moves through a legislative program headed into a very strong reelection year where all bets will be off once the Mueller report drops. This creates a set of very grave difficulties, not only for Republicans in the White House, but for Democrats and what they do moving forward. And so that just creates a real dissonance or cacophony of just noise that we'll see on Capitol Hill in our politics.
Well, it certainly made my ears perk up when he said last night, quote, "If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way," unquote. And a surprising sort of combination of subjects there. Is it reminiscent of what Richard Nixon did in one of his State of the Unions?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Nixon would try to talk about and would certainly try to be statesmanlike on the one hand, but with the background of how he was operating inside with his operation. The one difference here is that Nixon, once Watergate broke and once things moved forward in terms of investigations, clearly that changed our politics for a long, long time, maybe even to this day. But for the Trump administration, you have the background of 17 different Mueller investigations or strings going on. You have a series of individuals who have been indicted and pled guilty. You have all of this specter that goes on behind while you have great difficulty with what is going on in the world. There was an announcement today that the president will be attending a summit in December of NATO leaders. Look, this is a guy who has reset our politics and questioned the very viability of something like NATO, which has been a key of U.S. security policy for decades. He has reset how we think about Russia, and I would argue he's even reset the expectations around the State of the Union. All of that goes to the core of Donald Trump as salesman, Donald Trump as ego. It doesn't go to Donald Trump as a statesman or leader, something that both Nixon and Trump and all presidents try to portray. And that kind of bipolar, bimodal presidency that shoots from the hip is problematic moving down the line. But Democrats don't have an answer for that, at least yet.
And who do you think, Dave, was that statement with regard to wars and the investigation? Who was he talking to in that moment?
Well, he's certainly talking to Democrats who would like to push for impeachment, Democrats who would like to push for strong investigations. That would be everyone from Barbara Lee of Oakland to Adam Schiff from Southern California. But also, he has a concern, and that is that Republicans on Capitol Hill are privately concerned about what the president believes. As we move closer and closer to the 15th of February, Republicans are unsure how much to support him about certain issues. That includes the wall and immigration. He didn't mention DACA or a deal on immigration that would lose Democrats. And so that also reverberates to the Senate, because there are about 10 GOP senators who don't want to vote for a wall and could desert the president, and that worries Mitch McConnell. All of that leads to some upheaval. So he's talking not only to Democrats who might investigate him, but also to his own caucus, while trying to talk to a very divided and polarized country, whether we look at that division over race, ideology, or culture.
Did the president make a case for proclaiming a national emergency on the border to get that wall built?
Well, they certainly talked about that the last week to 10 days, and then they walked away from it over the 24 hours before the speech. He has set forth that if he declares a national emergency, it's going to be problematic not only legally, but politically for him as we move closer to the Mueller investigation wrapping up or that report being dropped as we move closer to 2020. So while the polling data tells us that folks who viewed the speech, listened to the speech, watched it, thought that it was a positive speech, the question is what comes next? And, you know, Michael Cohen is on Capitol Hill later this week. Acting AG Whitaker is on. Capitol Hill later this week. The president will tweet all of the momentum or grace that was captured in the speech. That'll be lost in a news cycle that'll clearly be less than 24 hours away.
And Dave, what can the Democrats do to capitalize on this or these olive branches that the president was handing out last night? What can the Democrats do to put the pedal to the metal and make him walk the talk?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because Democrats have to explain what their aspirations are, what their beliefs are. It's not enough to just be anti or counter Trump. One of those aspirations has been Medicare for all. One of those aspirations has been about infrastructure, about doing something related to prescription drug benefits. The question is whether Democrats want to give the president a win on any of those things, and specifically what infrastructure looks like or what any type of deal around health care is going to look like. And that's where things get difficult, because the politics of divisive elections are much more powerful than the politics of positive policy or making things work in terms of governing. And so Democrats right now are trying to develop a message like that. We see that with Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren or candidates that haven't even gotten into the race, like Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden. But as that divisiveness builds towards 2020, Democrats are going to be perplexed about whether or not they want to give a victory. Republicans are going to try to push hard and very much so while they're unsure what the president believes. And the president will be titillating about all of this via Twitter, where he's much more comfortable than he is on the teleprompter.
And do you think, Dr. McEwen, that the Republican women sent out a memo and said, whatever you do, don't wear white?
Yeah. I mean, that certainly was an important juxtaposition. And that also gives you the power, too, of the diversity of Congress, the power of women, particularly suburban women, key demographics headed into 2020 that Democrats and Republicans hope to capture.
Yeah, and it was striking, the number of women on the Democratic side, many of them new congresswomen, wearing white in honor of the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote in 2020. And so that was very striking. Did the president misunderstand reaction by those women when he talked and he mentioned and acknowledged their emergence in the new Congress?
Well, I think that he sometimes, when he goes off script or he talks about elements where he shoots from the hip, he is misunderstanding what's going on. That's one element of his style. And the question is, can he find common ground with any of those Democratic women that were in white, or with suburban women in general? Because the gender gap that this White House has is substantial, while that block of voters is growing and resistance to their agenda, the Trump agenda, is growing as well. The politics of abortion would be an example of that, but the politics of kids at the border would be another example. And this administration is going to have to think long and hard how it captures that group of voters. It's not homogenous by any means, but it is also difficult for the administration to grab and hold that set of voters on key issues like abortion, like children, like health care, like economy, issues that really are pervasive across the whole electorate.
And there was no mention of DACA recipients in this country.
Yeah.
There was not a single mention of the subject of climate change. I suppose that was probably on purpose.
Yeah, certainly. And you can point to strong economic numbers. The economy certainly has done very well. The jobs numbers are very strong. The question is, how does this administration handle any clawback, how the speech plays overseas, what it does for our interests there, what it does for our interests beyond just the surging stock market. If we continue to have lots of volatility, whether that's economic volatility or in the security arena, it's unclear whether the talent in the White House and this administration is capable of dealing with that. We haven't had a crisis. We haven't had any really big moments in some ways, and that'll be the real test of the president's leadership. He hasn't exhibited many tools to show that they can deal with that, but that will be an open question as well.
And Dave, a lot of people feel that way about the speech last night. They were waiting for a big moment, and some people felt like, well, it was kind of like watching the Super Bowl on Sunday, a little on the boring side, and we're waiting for some big moment to emerge, and a lot of people feel like that didn't happen.
Well, he's no Tom Brady, that's for sure. But, it certainly was anticlimactic. You know, what the president and his team are very good about, however, is building the watch. Is that building the suspense? The question is, can they perform in the last couple of minutes like we see with the Patriots over and over again? And we haven't seen a president who is Tom Brady like. We've seen someone who's much more about throwing bombs and then seeing what happens and trying to pick up the pieces. That's a confrontational, divisive politics. It's not a uniting politics. It energizes confrontation and persuades a smaller and smaller group of people.
And of course, finally, you know, the overview of the whole thing and what were people doing while they were listening, et cetera. If I had a dollar for every Nancy Pelosi meme I've seen today sitting behind the president, I'd probably be heading toward retirement at this stage of the game. Did she show her reaffirmed power last night?
Well, I mean, she certainly gave the president moments of polite applause and politeness by the nature of his office. But clearly Nancy Pelosi is riding high, and Democrats are riding high while they're staying whole about pushing back against this administration. That's a role that she relishes. Once the Mueller report drops, the dynamic in Washington and the dynamic for Democrats will completely change, because the move to impeach or the move for stronger investigations will just take over the political air, and that will be a test of her leadership. Right now, she rides high. She's polite. The question is, what does she do next? And that's certainly an open question, not only for her, but for all the political leaders, including Donald Trump, our president.
And Dave, you mentioned the political contenders in the audience. There were several of them. One of them, Elizabeth Warren. More news this morning coming out about her application to the Bar Association, where she claimed her Native American ancestry. Is she in real trouble?
Yeah, I mean, the dynamic around 2020 for Democrats is one about change and progress. It seems to me that people like Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, they've really missed their chance or their moment. They will energize the progressive side of the Democratic Party, but this is much more an election about who comes next and what that next person believes and what they're in favor of. That puts someone like Kamala Harris in the driving seat, in the driver's seat, even though it's very early. It puts someone like Cory Booker with some momentum behind him, or even some of the others that have announced or are thinking about announcing that are outside or around politics. It emboldens women, for sure, but the question is whether Democrats are going to have a new guard or an old guard. And right now, they have an old guard. If Biden gets in, he leaps to the front by the nature of a number of different things. But the question is, he's going to have a ticket that juxtaposes or have someone that represents a new Democrat and new way. That will be a challenge for the old guard. And that's a challenge for Elizabeth Warren, because her gig right now is going to just continue to come at her in terms of negativity and how they respond and adjust to that and how she deals with that in the campaign and the fluidity that she has to respond. That is a test that we haven't seen her respond to very well so far.
And one more, I promise, just one more question for you, Dave. And that is, if
I'm here for you, Pat.
I appreciate it, sir. I really do. If Biden decides to jump in with all four, and would it assist him to have somebody like, say, Kamala Harris as his running mate?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an old versus new, I'd argue, a tired versus refreshed. The dynamic around 2020 for Democrats is progressive to the left. Is about us versus them. Joe Biden can unite that, at least temporarily, but he's going to have to energize or do things that are new and novel that represent a new, fresh face. That helps someone like Kamala Harris. And I would argue, so far, everyone who's running for president right now for the Democrats is really running for vice president, whether that's someone like Eric Swalwell or Kamala Harris, someone from California or not. That will be key for the Democrats, especially if someone like Joe Biden gets in.
Well, it's interesting. At this stage of the game, it's pretty interesting and fun to watch. And Dave, thanks so much for being with us this morning. Appreciate it right after the State of the Union.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Pat. It's always a pleasure.
All right. That's Dr. Dave McEwen from Sonoma State University. He's the go-to guy, nationally speaking, too, when it comes to a political vantage point. He's also a very even-keeled guy, and I like that about him, too. So thanks to Dr. Dave McEwen.